Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Yes, yes, yes. Once again, back in the house talking with TD. You are now tuned in. It's a bye week after a thrilling, you hear me, thrilling victory over the Chiefs for the Titans. And there's a lot to get into. We'll do a couple play breakdowns as always. We got the Josh Kalou block coming in. We have the scoop and score by Rashawn Evans. We're going to get into all that. But first things first, make sure you do what you got to do, and you know what it is. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Search Talking with TD on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Please give me that. Give us that five-star rating. You get a bonus edition because you get Chase and TD as well. So you just get unlimited Teron Davenport, Calvin Smith, and Chase McCabe coming right into your eardrum here to bring you that rawness. But let's get into this game, though, because I think when you look at this offense, I think it really got on track. And I know you're going to say, well, you know, it took a little bit for them to get some points. They even had to get a score from the defense. You're right. But you know what happened, man? That F-150 that was sitting in the driveway, they pulled it out and put it on that dirt road, and it showed just exactly what it could do for you when you rev it to the fullest. And that F-150 is number 22, Derrick Henry. Daggum it, man. He had 23 carries, a buck 88, two touchdowns as well, 68-yard scamper. I tell you one thing. I haven't heard Nissan Stadium that loud since when? The last time Derrick Henry had one of those long scampers. This team, and before we even get into the game, I'm going to say this, right? And I'm going to make this message nice and clear. I know a lot of people are anti-pay the running back, but with Derrick Henry, you're paying more than a running back. You're paying the heart of the offense. 4 years, $41 million, guaranteed 36. Wrap it up, sign, seal, and deliver, and keep 22 here in Nashville. I think it's a must move for John Robinson and the Titans. Jimmy Sexton, you know what you got to do now that I said that. I need that check, man. Let me get that finder's fee. But real talk, like I said, Derrick Henry pretty much carried this team. You know, a buck 88. In the fourth quarter, he had 8 carries. And shout out to Arthur Smith, 8 carries, 8 rushes for Derrick Henry in the fourth quarter, even though they were down by 9 points. It stuck to the run. They identified what they needed to do and stuck to it. A few numbers here for Derrick Henry. He's the 5th Titan to have 30 or more touchdowns. Number 1 all-time, Titans/Oilers, obviously. Earl Campbell, 73. Eddie George with 64. CJ2K with 50. And Steve McNair with 36. Checking in at number 5 is Derrick Henry with 30. Then when you look at that 68-yard scamper, that was his longest carry of this year. It was the first one he's had of 40 or more yards, so that's something to definitely take note of. You saw that average per carry kind of bump up to 4.4 yards per carry, which is a good thing. In the second half, he had 10 carries for 140 yards, 2 touchdowns. As I said, 8 carries in the fourth quarter. Definitely knew when it was time to turn it up. And then just some other numbers on the year. So when you look at Derrick Henry's 75-yarder against the Browns, the catch on the screen, and then you had the 68-yarder he had this past Sunday. That took him to 6 touchdowns of at least 60 yards rushing or receiving. Only two, well, actually, no. He had, that's 2 times as much as any other running back. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, they each have 3. And then it was the first time a player had a 60-yard touchdown rushing and receiving in a year since 2017 when Hunt and Henry did that. Long story short, this is a special back that you guys have in front of you. 832 yards for the year. He's fifth. 8 rushing TDs puts him at fourth. Then when you look at 10 total TDs, that's top in the AFC and tied with my man from the Vikings for third in the NFC. Why am I drawing a blank, Calvin? With Dalvin Cook. I don't know why I drew a blank there, but he's tied with Dalvin Cook for third in the AFC, third in the NFL in touchdowns. So what does all this mean? All those numbers that I'm putting out to you, all the information that I just spit out is just further proof that Derrick Henry is two things. He's the heart of this offense, and he's your most explosive player. That's really the bottom line. So that being said, obviously this came against the 29th ranked rushing defense. However, it's getting cold outside. Like that song goes, baby, it's getting cold outside. That's what's happening, right? And when it gets cold, those punishing runs, that hard to tackle back becomes all the more useful. Expect to see more carries for Derrick Henry going forward. But as anything with an offense, you have to have balance. And for me, I think Ryan Tannehill is giving this team sufficient balance. When you look at what he's been able to do, especially in the red zone, right? It used to be they get in the red zone, pretty much they're going to give Derrick Henry the ball. But now you have a guy, and even Mariota, you had the same thing, whereas you could run that read option and you could have him pull it and run it. But now you have a guy that's able to fit it into tight windows and not afraid to do that. You have a guy who is more decisive with the football, right? So as a result, you have 10 red zone visits resulting in 10 touchdowns. Folks, before Tannehill took over as the starter, this team, the Titans, were 19th in the NFL as far as red zone touchdown percentage. They are now number one. They've gone from 58% to 72%. That's doing something. And the thing that's really interesting with Tannehill is you look at this game this past Sunday. I wouldn't say he had an outstanding game. What, 13 for 19, 180 something? But when it mattered, he turned his game up. You saw that last drive, and there's a post on ESPN.com. Make sure you check it out. Kind of took you inside of the huddle before they went out there. You got perspective from various players, Tannehill, Taylor Lewan, Anthony Ferguson, Adam Humphries, Mike Vrabel shared what he told him. And basically what he told Tannehill was go out there, have some fun, and go win it. That's what he did. That play broke down on the first snap. It broke down. He was able to step up in the pocket, find a crease, took off 18 yards. That play right there set the tone for the whole drive. Because imagine what would have happened if, as that pocket was collapsing on him, he crumbled up and got sacked. Now you got all the time ticking off the clock, and on top of that, you lost 6 to 8 yards. Not this week. That's not what happened. And then he went deep, tried to get the ball to A.J. Brown, and, I mean, it was questionable. The refs let him play. I'm not mad at that. You let the guys play ball. I thought maybe it could have been pass interference, but, again, they let him play ball. Then he hits Anthony Ferguson on that in-breaking route. And then the touchdown came when it was time to let it rip. He saw it, he believed it, and he ripped it. That's something we said Mariota needed to do. That's something that Tannehill did. Adam Humphries, shout out to him for powering into the end zone after catching that ball. I want to get into that route that he ran, but first I want to just finish up with Tannehill and just talk about how he is – He's immersing himself into this team as a leader. You hear Ryan Tannehill after he had the run, right? You hear Jonnu Smith, he said he's a dog, right? You hear Mike Vrabel complimentary of him. You see him, and I thought it was really cool. I watched the replay. After he bowled over Juan Thornhill for the two-point conversion, he stood up over him and gave him a little, like a incredible Hulk flex. I was cracking up on that because – if you have dealt with Tannehill, you will understand why I was kind of surprised by that, and it made me laugh because he's very like meager. Like he it doesn't seem like he has that type of killer in him. But hey, man, he brought it out on that. I want to bring up one of the things that Mike Vrabel had to say about Tannehill, actually, because Vrabel was asked what they're getting, if they're getting what they expected out of Tannehill, and he had a pretty interesting answer.
I think Ryan is it's a unique situation. I was very aware of that. I think coming in, that having been a starter in this league, coming here, learning an offense to try to invest as much as he could to be ready for the opportunity, and he was. You know, and it's a fine line. I think that he was, you know, there were things that he probably wanted to say or do as a backup that he had normally done as a starter. Respect to the situation, you know, he probably didn't. And I think now that where he's at, you know, starting for us, it's been everything that we'd hoped for, have him coming in to be ready to go to assume that role. And you know, we have to continue to do those things. We have to continue to work with receivers and linemen and understand where we're going to be in the pocket, where receivers, where we want guys when they're man coverage, zone coverage. You know, getting down in the red zone, there's been a lot of reps at a lot of these plays, and you know, our players are confident and comfortable in what we're doing. And when you can run it in, it makes it a little easier. So, again, that's been a key for us to be able to score when we get down there and not kick field goals. They attempted 5 yesterday. And again, thank God that we were able to keep them to field goals in those situations.
So that was Mike Vrabel on Tannehill. And as he said, you know, it really starts with the quarterback. And he wanted to bring him in there to give that offensive spark. And I believe Tannehill has definitely done that. So definitely I tip my cap to him. And like I said, they are on their way offensively. I think there's plenty of room for improvement, though. Plenty of room for improvement. They're not going to be able to get into a game like this with the Saints, right? Because the Saints, their offense is just as strong as the Chiefs, but the defense is much stronger. So all that, you know, okay, they beat the Chiefs this way in a shootout. They could beat anybody. No, it still has to be proven. I'm just going to give it to you the way I see it. You know what I'm saying? But getting back to Adam Humphries, right? I was really impressed with him as far as, and this is something we talked about a couple weeks ago on Talking with TD. Adam Humphries and his ability to identify the coverage and know how to adjust his route on the fly against it, right? He said that they were expecting cover 2 man, okay? You got the 2 safeties up on the post. That's how you know it's cover 2 or some form of it. And then from there, from the safeties, you look to the corners and you see them aligned head up as opposed to outside shoulder trying to funnel, whereas they will try to funnel you inside. Now you know, okay, we got cover 2, and they were lined up head up, but not off of the ball, right? So if they're a little bit off the ball, like 4 yards or so off the ball, that's an instant key that they're cover 4 because you have the 2 high post safeties, and then you got the guys on the outside. So Humphries processed that really quick. He said, okay, we got 4 verticals, 4 seams, and in this situation, the inside of the field is where we want to attack. I think he did an awesome job of doing just that. Khalif Raymond, too. Raymond got off the ball, and his route, his go route and his speed, which flashed on an earlier catch that he had, that actually helped make that play. Because the way Raymond exploded off the ball and got the corner that was covering him in trail position caused Tyrann Mathieu to come off of that hash and go over to that part of the field. He drew the deep part of Matthew's assignment. So now, from that, all you had was air and opportunity for Adam Humphries to do what he does. You guys heard about it during camp. You guys that went to practice saw it during camp. One-on-one, that dude is virtually unstickable. He showed it this week. And in this game, another thing to note, 27, I forget the DB's name, but he's a reserve. He's not the normal nickel corner. Normally they have Kendall Fuller. And this is a matchup I was saying was definitely going to be one to watch, but he wasn't in there. So 27 was in there as a result, and he got matched up against the worst guy to get matched up on the Titans in the slot. So what does Humphries do? Gets a release, stacks him, and then at the top of the route, gives him that little head nod to the outside, and then comes back inside 27, didn't know what to do. And that helped create that amount of separation. And the thing that was crazy is not Humphreys, but Firkser coming on the other side. He was running. I'm not sure exactly what to call the route, but he managed, because it wasn't a seam route. And it wasn't a dagger. It was kind of a blend of the two. But he was kind of running towards the middle of the field also. Fortunately, Humphreys had circled his route just a little bit before he bent it back inside. And that allowed that space to still be there. But there were two receivers in almost the same spot. But, again, Tannehill saw it. He believed it, ripped it. What a throw. What a play. Next thing you know, the Titans are in position to win the game. Obviously, there needed to be some other type of fireworks for that, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But, you know, I'm going to end it on this note. Offense, they look good. They put up a good amount of points. I'm not going to say 30 because, again, you know, seven of it came from the defense. But I'm going to end it on Khalif Raymond. And I mentioned earlier how his ability to get vertical helped open up that play. But none of this would have even, because this team needed a spark. They needed a major spark, right? Because they were flat on offense. Tannehill dropped back, launched a bomb, Khalif Raymond running under. And let me tell you this, folks. And if you guys have been in the Titans, the end zone, like where the tunnel where the Titans come out before a game, and you look to the opposite side, you see how that sun is. That sun is really, really bright. And I remember standing in the end zone. I was with Dan Graziano from ESPN, from the mothership. And I said, man, I would hate to be a punt returner, or I would hate to have to run under a football looking back into that sun. It was tough to track the football, but he did an excellent job tracking the football. He kept his eyes on it. He caught that thing. He had the wherewithal to get up just in case he wasn't touched and run into the end zone. But that set up the first score, that Firkser diving touchdown. So shout out to Khalif Raymond, a guy who is the epitome of staying ready so you never have to get ready. He did his thing in training camp. He got released, ended up on the practice squad. I know, you know, I had to hold Calvin's hand and keep him from jumping off the pedestrian bridge. But, you know, everything worked out. And now here he is, back with the Titans and doing a tremendous job. So we're going to go ahead to a break. Before we do, I want to remind you there is another home game coming up next Sunday. Tennessee Tickets is where you go. Go ahead and get your tickets to that. Make sure you purchase there, support local businesses. You do not have to pay any extra fees once you purchase it. The price you pay is the price that the tickets are sold. That's it. That's all. Also, Vandy girls and boys, men and women, we'll say it that way, men and women basketball, you need Preds tickets, you could go there as well. Anything here in Nashville, TennesseeTickets.com, and be sure to tell them TD sent you. We'll be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD. Clap to this.
Make them clap to this. That's right. Eric B and Rock M, make them clap to this. We are back from the break. I chose make them clap to this because that's what the defense is making the Titans fans do. He's making them clap to this because the performance that they're putting out has been outstanding. And it's crazy that I'm saying this after they back-to-back gave up the most points that they've given up in 30 and then 32. Yeah, the most points they've given up this season. They've done it. But 530 total yards of offense. When I say they did their job, you probably look at me and say, man, are you crazy? I'm not crazy. They did their job. Here's why. They kept the game close. Usually if a team scores or puts up 530 yards of offense as opposed to your offense putting up 371, which is nothing to shake your head at, you know what I mean? But when that kind of thing happens, normally it's a blowout. Like, it's a one-sided game. But that wasn't the case with this defense. They did what they typically do. Hold teams from scoring. You're going to get yards, but you're not always going to get points. And the Chiefs went up and down the field multiple times, but they struggled as often as the 530 yards would dictate. They struggled to get the ball in the end zone. One of the best plays of the week, actually Adoree Jackson. I mean, listen, Adoree had his struggles, right, with Tyreek Hill. There were a couple times where he had him on third and one tackled, and Tyreek Hill, man, that's a little bulldog, man. He's not only fast, he's powerful. Calvin said it. He saw him before the game, you know, doing warm-ups, and he was like, yo, I didn't know he was Cock Diesel like that. And yeah, he is, man. And that's the thing with a guy like Tyreek Hill. He brings the total picture. But even though he had 11 receptions, 140, 150 yards, Adoree Jackson had the best play of the game as far as covering Tyreek Hill. And that was a breakup that forced a punt from in the red zone. So tip your cap to him. But I just think when you look at this defense, it is getting more and more legit. Harold Landry is becoming what we here on this show said he was going to become. You got 7 sacks on the season. There's still 6 more games to go, folks. He's going to get double-digit sacks. I wouldn't be surprised if he has 11, 12 sacks. That's definitely a very good improvement from last year. Finally, the Titans could say they have a guy with double-digit sacks. It's been a couple years since they've been able to say that. So Harold Landry has provided the pass rush. You have Jarrell Casey, you know, when he comes back, and that's the good thing about this bye week, it's going to be good for Casey. On Friday before the game, I saw him just kind of doing sprints. He had the cowboy collar in the game before. Obviously, we have the shoulder injury. So we're going to see what happens there. But I think between Casey and Jeffrey Simmons, that's your interior push. And I'll say it every week. I don't care. Hey, you could call me a broken record, but I'll say it every week. Daquan Jones is balling. He's not getting that pressure on the quarterback, but he's balling. I saw him chase down a screen on Sunday. I saw him, they managed to get past him on a running play. I saw him chase down a run 3 or 4 yards down the field. The big fella, Daquan Jones, a.k.a. Rick Ross, is out there balling, man. So, you know, they're doing better and better up front. You got the secondary doing their thing. But I skipped over the linebackers purposely. And why did I do that? Because they have an ascending player in Rashawn Evans. They have a young rookie who's maximizing opportunities, man. I think he only played, David Long only played, what, 28 snaps or something like that? But he ended with 6 or 8 tackles. I'll tell you how much to be exact. But he just maximized his opportunities, man. And this is a guy who actually had the forced fumble that helped. I mean, that was a pivotal moment in the game, you know. The Titans had just scored. The Chiefs were driving. It was 10-7. You know, the running back, Williams, he had to carry. Sharif Finch did a good job setting that edge, funneled it back inside. David Long pursued, and he punched it out, and Rashawn Evans was Johnny on the spot and picked it up. But this is just a testament to some of the things that they've done, drill work, and just making things happen on the football field. This is a team that has now learned how to turn the football over, right? And when I say turn the football over, I'm talking about creating turnovers. They learned how to get turnovers, and they're not giving the ball away much themselves. So you have a winning formula. But that play, now that we kind of got into that, that's going to be our first play breakdown. We're going to get Rashawn Evans to come on in here and talk a little shop, go over the scoop and score.
So this is the scoop and score, the 53-yarder. What's going on here? How did you scoop it so easily? You know what
I'm saying? Man, to be honest with you, I just saw, I guess whenever, you know, I was coming around, I just saw the ball just out of the corner of my eye. I was like, man, that's the ball. Like, you know, I was a little shocked by it. And I was like, shit, I'm going to just try to scoop it up. I got my hands up on it. So happened, and it just happened perfectly. I got my hands up on it. I saw Mahomes. I just tried to stick it and try to, you know, get by him. And then once I did that, I was like, shoot, I'm going to just make sure I don't get caught so I can get a touchdown.
It's funny you mentioned Mahomes because that move that you put right here,
yeah,
I thought you were going to send him back to the
But you know what? I was thinking, I don't know. I kept looking at that. I was like, I don't know if he was actually trying to tackle me, if he was just trying to get down. It looked like he was trying to get down. But either way, I was like, look, I was just going to give him at least a dead leg just to try to get around him because, you know, I was still trying to score. So, but I was able to get past everybody, try to be able to not get caught by Tyreek. So it worked out.
So ESPN, we have a thing where we could go in. Mm-hmm. They have chips in your shoulder pads. Mm-hmm. We could see how fast you were going. Mm-hmm. On this one, you were clocked at 19 miles an hour.
Wow.
You realize if you ran through a school zone, you get ticketed for speed.
I get ticketed for speed, word. I ain't even realized I was running that fast.
Now, did you see Tyreek coming? Tyreek Hill
I saw you when you saw it towards the end. I was looking back because I knew in the back of my head I had seen him run people down before. I was like, he might run me down. So I started to see it in the corner of my eyes. I started seeing him approach. I was like, look, man, I don't know if it was about 20 more yards you probably caught, yeah, you know. Yeah, so yeah. I was like, look, I'm gonna make sure I just get in his end zone.
And then to make it all happen, the rookie, mm-hmm. I mean,
no
running,
doubt,
David Young,
yeah,
able to poke it out.
Yeah, he made it. He the one that started this thing, man. He made it happen, and for me to be able to, you know, be able to run this thing in the end zone, it all started from him drawing that ball out, and it just goes to show you, man, you know, just the fact that he was able to come in there and do his thing. He played a heck of a game, and you know, I see the sky's the limit for him, man, for these next couple of games.
Is that something that you guys work on with Coach Ty, mm-hmm. punching it out?
No doubt, we work on that almost every practice. You know, ripping it out, working on trying to get that ball out so our defense can create more turnovers. And, you know, I feel like once you do that and you actually get the ball out, it just heightens your percentage of, you know, make big plays like this.
So that was Rashawn Evans. And as he said, that punching the ball out is something that they worked on. And you got to shout out David Long. You know what I mean? He made an excellent play. As I said, Rashawn, you know, he has to be careful running that fast. Because he could get a speeding ticket if he was running through a school zone. You know what I mean? Clocked the 19 miles an hour. That's something, man. He definitely did a really good job, and he showed some wheels. Along those lines, when we talk about the inside linebackers, I want to get into Jayon Brown, right? So he's another guy that is going to benefit from this bye week. He was out. We had the groin situation that he's dealing with. But in his place, Wesley Woodyard has been a valuable member of this team. And he's a team captain, right? And he's a guy that understood his role. Vrabel shouted him out for it, you know, accepted the role of being a reserve guy, rotational guy. He's viewed as a third starter at inside linebacker, so the respect is there. And he came in and he played a solid game, and he just did what he had to do. And I think that inside linebacking core is solid, man. I think they are really good. I think the defense as a whole is solid. Dean Pease is doing a great job using Logan Ryan, who, I tell you a funny story, man. I talked to Logan on Monday, and he was saying, man, he said he was as tired after that game as he's been all year. You know, and I get it, man, because when you look at, and that's one of the things I like about some of these next-gen stats, right? They have the chips that they put in their shoulder pads. So you could track maximum speeds. You could track how much sprinting they did, how much ground they covered altogether. Logan Ryan covered a lot of ground, man. He covered a lot of ground. Looks like here, according to this stat, 1,619 yards he covered. It was the second most on the team. Kevin Byard, 1,657. But his max speed was 19 miles an hour, so he was another guy that he'd get a speeding ticket. Adoree Jackson had the top speed on the Titans, 21.7 miles an hour. Top speed in the game overall, Tyreek Hill, 22 miles an hour, chasing down that 19 mile an hour of Rashawn Evans, but he couldn't catch him because Evans was working those angles. But, I mean, Ryan played 80-plus snaps. You know, they asked a whole lot of him, but he still came through. And granted, you had the touchdown that sometimes you just got to say, oh, you know what? They just made a good play. I'll accept that. Mahomes off his back foot, perfect teardrop to the corner of the end zone. The Roadrunner ran underneath it and got it. I mean, there's nothing you could do about that. There just isn't. So for you guys that want to fault him for that, hey, listen, you know what? Sometimes you have the guy on the other side, he makes a play. But there were some good plays that Logan Ryan made. So he's a guy that I've voted for as my MVP on the defense, frankly. And I just, when you look at his ability to rush the passer, when you look at his interceptions, week in and week out, he's covering in that slot. And that's something we talked about, man. When you are asked to cover the slot, you don't have the sideline to use to your advantage, right? You can't funnel a guy out. You have to just, every play, every pass route, you have so much ground to cover. Logan also pointed out how he's utilizing run defense too, and he's 100% right. You know, on the outside, you know what I mean? I'll admit it, as a receiver, there were times I would take a play off, right, by just giving a move at the line and sprinting 10 yards and then jogging the rest down the field. That's me blocking. I took my guy out of the play, right? Well, as a corner, you notice that, and you kind of cruise control through that as well. In the nickel, you can't do that, right? When you're inside, you can't do that. So that's something else for Logan Ryan. It doesn't show up on the stat sheets, but that's something that you have to look at. So overall, man, defense definitely did their thing. I really can't say too much more about them, but at the same time, there was a play late in the game. Josh Kalu allowed a deep catch to put the Chiefs in position to kick the field goal. One of the things I really like about Kalu, and this is something I wanted to get him to talk about in the play breakdown, is just the way that he had the short-term memory. He put it behind him, and he came back and lived to see another play. And that's huge. Not only on the football field, it's huge in life, man. Like, there are times where something may happen, right? You may not get that promotion that you wanted, but you know what? You live to see another day, and you get an even better promotion. Josh Kalu in this game was basically the epitome of that. Moving on, moving past it, leaving it behind, and moving forward. Let's get Josh Kalu to break this thing down. Check it out.
There was a completion that led to an opportunity for a field goal, but you bounced back.
Yeah, a lot of people noticed that, you know what I mean? Going into it, they put me in the game, and we had a certain play call, but I could have been tied on the coverage. And I don't think I realized how far down the field he ran, and he got himself in a comfortable position for them to be in field goal range, you know? And after he caught the ball, I was like, oh, man, like, you know, I put us in a bad situation. And, man, on the sideline, I didn't let it get to me. Just like, all right, on to the next one. I mean, I can't change anything about it. In the past, I would let it get to me and would eat me alive, but I just knew if I had an opportunity for us to get on field goal, I was going to make a play.
Yeah, and that's the thing, man, that DB mentality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That short-term memory. Yep. What does that say about your personality, though, to be able to bounce back and come back and make a play like this we're about to go through?
I'm a dog. I'm a dog, you know, and it's been like that since I was younger, high school, no matter what. You know what I mean? I feel like I'm going to make a play, and I have the most confidence out of anybody, and I'll tell you that right now. Even if they think they have more confidence than me, I feel like I have the most confidence. And that's how I approach things, you know. I never want to disappoint nobody, so I want to go out there and make a play, and if somebody beats me, I'm going to be mad. But now I'm learning, you know, just bounce back. Bounce back, make a play out the next thing. So, you know what I mean? We had a chance to kick the field goal, or they had a chance to kick the field goal, and I knew that I was getting closer and closer every time. And, I mean, the situation arose itself with 3 seconds left on the clock. In my head, there was only three options. Me, I'm going to jump it. I'm going to jump it, and I'm going to go block the kick. I'm going to jump it. They call me outside and block the kick, so they have to kick it again.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to kick the field goal and tie it, and then we're going to go into overtime. And two of those options sounded good to me rather than the third one. So
right.
I just took my chances and I went. You know?
Now, on the previous attempt where they had the intentional grounding, you were rushing from the opposite side, but you were the guy.
I was keying it. Like, everybody's not ready. I'm ready. Like, I'm ready. I was ready to go. And that play itself, I felt like I was going to go get one right now. You know what I mean? Because it was a situation where we were down, I guess, about 5 points, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go get one for the team no matter what. And it just happened that, I guess, I don't know, miscommunication or whatever happened. And I saw it and I took off. And I guess I hurried. I'm going to throw that bad boy.
Why were you lined up on the opposite side?
Don't be late, big star.
The block. I get you out of here in time.
I mean, that just the play coach argument and it was called. You know what I mean? They chose to come from that side. And that's about
right
it.
In the doghouse.
There we go. All right, it's 12:28. You got to get going, man. Appreciate you.
So that was Josh Kalu breaking it down. We pretty much put a ball around the defense, the game overall. Again, a very thrilling win for you Titans fans. Thrilling win for the Titans themselves. 35-32. They are now 5-5. We're going to go to a break. We're going to come back on Calvin's Corner. We'll be right back.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break to some feel-good music. As we keep our flow going, we're going to pull up to Calvin's Corner. Get a little analytical side of things. Calvin, what's up this week, man? I see the charts. I see the colors on there.
What
you got, man?
I'm working hard to try to make them more creative. Just something a little bit more fun to look at. But I wanted to just really review last week's Calvin's Corner, because we tried to preview this Chiefs run defense and where Derrick Henry's been at his best, right?
Right.
And it was off the right end. And I was thinking, oh, I mean, that just...
I texted you about it, middle of the game.
Yeah, you did. And we were talking about they kept running like right at Chris Jones. And we really got to see how good of a defender Chris Jones is for the Chiefs. But interestingly, when you go back in the data, you find which directions Derrick Henry was running to. He only had one run off the right end. Now he had one off right tackle, too, and only three off right guard. They weren't running to the right very much at all, despite Derrick Henry being at his best off the right end so far this season. Now, obviously, his best spot was the middle, because when he made that cutback, that's where the really big run came from. But I found that really interesting, first of all, that where Derrick Henry's been at his best and where the Chiefs were at their worst, like we talked about last week, it didn't come through in the way kind of you thought it would. And I totally would have expected, like, if he's going to go off, it's going to be where he's been at his strongest, where they've been healthy all season. Well, no, I can't say that. Because on the right guard position, they haven't been. But at right tackle, they've been consistent this season. And now, it's kind of puzzling. Like, they broke the tendency, which is something I've been saying that I thought they needed to do for a while now, but just not in this way. But they broke their tendency, and they didn't run off the left end either. And I think my whole mantra with Derrick Henry has been, get him in space. Well, he made some cuts this week and broke his own tendencies as well. So that's got to be a big part of what made him successful, is he wasn't the same guy where he's normally had his successes from, which probably caught the Chiefs off guard.
Yeah, I think it did catch him off guard. And it's funny, it kind of hit me as you were talking about it, but I went back to a drill I saw them doing. And it's crazy, it was to the same exact side and everything. It was almost verbatim how the play set up, that 68-yard run.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Henry was running to the left and kind of strung it out, put his foot in the dirt, and cut it back. Literally, I took a video of Coach Tony Dews working with them about that.
Yeah.
And it was almost verbatim what happened. It's crazy. It was the video I posted where they were using the trash cans to figure out how to cut. But
yeah.
Shout out to Tony Dews for having that right. But you're right, man. You know, it was a little skewed because of that 68-yard run. I, for the life of me, don't understand why they ran at Christy Jones. I was doing a pregame spot with one of the Kansas City channels. And let me tell you, man, that dude ran by me. I was like, oh, sweet Jesus.
It was funny. Before the game, Taylor Lewan was, you know, giving a little bit of jaw as the Chiefs walked by back into their locker room. And I saw Chris Jones, man. He just looked at Lewan and just kind of gave him this little smile and started shaking his head. And I'm like, oh, man. Oh,
it's
going to
be a challenge. Yeah, man.
But another little note about the Chiefs game and how this offense really came into their own, you know, despite a lot of a really big play from the defense, like you were talking about in the first segment. On first and second down this week, the Titans were fantastic. And I think that's a huge key in how this team doesn't fall behind the chains, fall behind the game plan they're trying to get going. Like this week against the Chiefs, I got to pull it up here. This week against the Chiefs, the Titans averaged over 11 yards per pass attempt on first down, or over 12, and that's going to be skewed by the Adam Humphries play. But it's still good to have that on average. I mean, there was an adequate enough sample size. And then on run plays, they averaged over 6 yards on first downs. Getting ahead of the chains, getting consistent, like, forward motion for this Titans offense, is they can't function without that, because the Chiefs might be able to because they have electrifying playmakers. The Titans cannot operate in that way. And a huge key for that is Derrick Henry and his negative runs throughout the season. And when I was building a graph looking at Derrick Henry, where he gained his yards when I was looking at the distribution, I pulled it up and I looked at my y-axis, which is what determines the yards gained.
Okay.
And for the first time that I've looked at it on an individual game basis, no negative rushes for Derrick Henry.
Interesting. Because like you said, normally that explosive one is in there to offset it.
Yes. Normally there's a couple minus twos, a couple minus threes, and they're kind of like pulling your averages back and forth, especially with EPA because it's scaled a little bit differently. But no, this week there were no negative rushes for Derrick Henry. And that might be the most important part of the offense from this week was, one, how good they were on first and second down, them not falling behind what they were doing. But second, for whatever reason, be it the offensive line getting a good push, because I thought they blocked really well against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And also, Derrick Henry you know, being able to put his foot in the ground when he needed to and just get forward and not have a negative rush.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And another thing just to kind of quickly point out is, as you mentioned, Chris Jones, he wasn't at the traditional DT position that he played. They had him lining up as a DN. But you won't hear me. Well, you will hear me a little bit later. I have something to say about the offensive line. But run block wise, I think they were solid, man. They were solid. Nate Davis is continuing to work. Ben Jones is Ben Jones, man. I think he's an underrated part of this offensive line. You got Conklin. You got LeJuan. Hey, listen, man. Hey, they're doing the thing that they need to do.
Another note, you know, obviously I'm the big passing guy, right? Like, I love to throw the ball because it usually results in higher EPAs and, you know, these stats that I like. Well, for this week, how about this? We'll start here. On the season as a whole, the Titans have a higher pass EPA than run EPA. I tweeted out a graph on that on Sunday that kind of shows where when the Titans are on the field, you know, at any yard line, they have a higher expected value from a pass play versus a run play. Well, this week broke that tendency as well. The Titans' run game, headlined by Derrick Henry in his huge game, of course, was even better than the passing game by EPA standards.
Really?
And so if I'm going to come out here and I'm going to say, hey, on the season as a whole, it's been better in the pass, well, against the Chiefs, it wasn't. And that's, I mean, in football, with the way EPA is calculated, that's really hard. Only two teams in the NFL have a higher rush EPA than pass EPA. And the Titans aren't one of them.
Panthers?
The Panthers are one of them, and I believe the Ravens are the other one.
Really? Well, go figure. He got two super explosive
Exactly.
players.
Yeah. But against the Chiefs, Derrick Henry and the Titans offensive line and everything they were doing was more valuable than the pass plays they were running. And really, their passing was break even for most of the game.
That's really interesting. And I mean, it just shows you being objective. I think really the bottom line is you have to adjust your game plan according to your opponent.
They didn't do it against the Panthers, really, it seemed.
And they lost the game. You know, that's,
yes. And that's it's like a perfect contrast.
Yeah.
Back to back weeks.
Yeah. And the thing that's just that should be frustrating for the players, frustrating for the fans, should be, why is it that you have to squander a game to figure this out?
Because there were penalties in this game too. Terrell Lewan still had a few this game against the Chiefs, and he had them against the Panthers, and that's kind of why when that was happening against the Panthers, I was like, okay, well, a couple times, you know, they got in these positions where Derrick Henry's skill set isn't best utilized, so that's why Deion Lewis was on the field a few times. But honestly, I want them to keep Derrick Henry on the field for third downs to add versatility to what you're doing, because every third down he's coming off the field, and that's just like, I mean, that is just building a game script. And then just the defense knows what's coming.
Yeah.
And if
yeah.
you can get him off the field, then that you'd rather have Deion Lewis on the field.
And that's where I think that screen pass is really important.
Yes.
They have to figure out, if I was Tony Dews, Arthur Smith, the offensive staff, I would start to incorporate more arrow routes where you come out of the backfield on an angle and then you break it back inside. Or angle route, excuse me. Yeah. I called it an arrow, not an arrow. But I would start to incorporate those type of things. So that way, these are routes that he can run.
Simple things. One cut. Simple. He's good at one cut.
Yeah, one cut. And, or even, I tell you another one that, I mean, I will use him on a wheel route.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Have that tunnel screen and have him leak into the backfield and up the seam. There are different things that you could do. Actually, I'm going to take this chance to plug ESPN Plus. I watched a details, Peyton Manning has a thing called details, and he broke down a play where the Seahawks against the Rams, they caught Aqib Talib in a situation where they had the slot guy run one of those pivot routes where you run a slant, you stick your foot in the ground, reverse out, and run it out. He ran that, and then he came back and ran it, and he reversed out and then broke it back inside. Well, Talib was trying to make the difference between the running back, Rashad Penny, running a wheel route and that angle route. He bit a little bit on it, and then next thing you know, Russell pump fake and then went over top. These are some of the things that they could do, because I don't feel Rashad Penny is any more able to run a route than Derrick Henry is. So just to kind of drop a nugget on a way that they could use him more in third down situations. But you're right, though, in this game, and it's really interesting that, you know, the EPA was different on runs. It was greater on runs than passes.
I mean, it was very high for a game average EPA, too, something you really don't see often.
I wouldn't have, as much as a component of the running game as I am, I would not have expected that.
Well, interestingly, the Titans had a higher rush EPA than the Chiefs had pass EPA. Granted, it broke down to a hundredth of a decimal point, but still.
Yeah, wow. Really interesting.
If they can do that again, then run the ball all you want. Like, if they can do that, run.
But again, folks, this is the 29th ranked run defense, so it is to be expected. So that's Calvin's Corner, an extension of the week before, just took it a little bit deeper. You guys know that this is where you get that analytical perspective, the perspective that you need, because it's always good to look at it from multiple angles. We'll be right back to wrap it up.
How you like me now? This is Corey Davis, and you're talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD, taking you back to 1987. Cool Mo D, Philly's finest. You heard what he said, how you like me now. That's fitting because so many of Mike Vrabel's decisions are questioned. Rightfully so. I mean, I've questioned a bunch of them. He's been on blow the whistle. But Calvin has one more thing from Calvin's Corner to kind of show you how this week some of Vrabel's decisions were actually pretty good.
Yeah, so in the EPA stat we've talked about a lot on this show, expected points added, really, you know, fancy algorithm for computing how many points things are expected to have. You know, on punts, you know, a lot of times the decisions are questionable, especially when you look at a lot of the numbers and the chances you can convert a lot of fourth down situations given the opportunities. Well, this week, the Titans had a very high EPA relative to their punts overall for the season, meaning not only did Brett Kern punt the ball well, but a large part of your EPA when you punt, because of the decision-making going into that and how EPA is built, it's really dependent on if the coach chose to punt there or not. So basically what that means is that Mike Vrabel made decisions to punt in certain situations better. There's actually a new Titans Twitter account called @TitansAnalytics doing a lot of really cool stuff, and this guy has built a win probability model built to analyze fourth down decision making by the Titans. And he said Mike Vrabel only misplayed his hand on one punting play, and that would be reflected in the EPA. Obviously, Brett Kern would have to punt the ball well. That's part of it. But a lot of times this season, Mike Vrabel's caught flack for his decisions on fourth downs, be it a fake field goal or whatever. But this week, they seem to have gotten it right more than they got it wrong, for sure.
Hey, got to shout out the special teams, right? And again, this is bringing balance. And before we move on, I want to just mention something else on special teams. I forgot to mention about Kalu and that block. If you go back and watch it again, as I said with Kalu, you know, the first time when you had the mishandled exchange that resulted in the intentional ground, and Kalu rushed the punt, the kick from the right side. This time he rushed it from the left side when he blocked it. If you get a chance to slow that down and see it, obviously the jump he got was tremendous, but just watch how, and it was just textbook, just watch the way with his inside arm, because the tight end was late. 81 was late. Blake Bell was late regardless, but he just, you know, gave one last try to slow him down. Kalu, Bruce lead him. He chopped that with his inside arm. He chopped it down perfectly and timed his dive and put that left hand up. That was textbook. Have to tip my cap to Josh Kalu for that. So, and it's great to see a guy that's always positive, always high energy, always positive vibes make a play like that. So good stuff, Josh Kalu. Going to move on to one other part of the house cleaning because I did get some questions about Rashawn Evans. He was carted in after the game. I think you pointed that out, as a matter of fact, Calvin. And a few other fans actually asked me about that. He is okay. He said that his back started to act up on him a little bit. I guess the old man, the young fella, couldn't rebound after hauling tail 19 miles an hour for 50 yards. But no, on a serious note, he said that he had a little bit of a back spasm. He said that he was fine. I remember him in the locker room afterwards. He was just standing there. But more importantly, on Monday when we got to see them, he was up and down out of his locker on the chair in front of his locker. When we did our breakdown, he stood up no problem. And then afterwards, I asked him about it, and he just said, you know, if we had a game this week, I would play wholeheartedly. I would be good to go. So that being said, it is something that obviously you can see a guy getting carted inside. You're going to be concerned. But fortunately for the Titans, he is okay. Now, before we get up out of here, obviously now that this team is 5-5, they're going into the bye with some momentum, you know, like a feel-good situation after beating the Chiefs. The next three games are going to be huge. So you have this upcoming Sunday. Well, not this Sunday, next Sunday, the Jaguars. And then on December 1st, you got the Colts, and then you got the Raiders. These are three teams who are right there with the Titans as far as the playoff seeding is concerned. Obviously, the Texans are on top of the division. So when you look at just how this thing has played out, and for all you who shouted about Mike Tomlin needing to be fired, through all of that, the Steelers are the sixth-rated team in the AFC at 5-4. They're in the playoffs. The Bills are 6-3. They're the 5 seed. The Chiefs, who the Titans just beat, are 6-4, and they are the 4 seed. 1, 2, and 3, the Ravens, or the Patriots, Ravens, and Texans. Now, why does this matter? Because upcoming, again, we mentioned the Jaguars, we mentioned the Raiders. The Jaguars right now are 4-5. They have a 1-2 division record, a 4-3 conference record. The Titans, conference record, 3-4. Division, 0-2. Here's the deal, folks. They have to win against the Jaguars, against the Colts, and twice against the Texans. They have to win those games. The Colts are 5-4. They are 2-0 in the division, 4-4 in the conference. The Raiders are 5-4, 2-1 in the division, 3-2 in the conference. That game December 8th against the Raiders, that's going to be a crucial game too. Quite frankly, every game left is a crucial game. You could afford a hiccup against the Saints. Other than that, they have to bring their A game. So, just wanted to give you that look at things. This team is still definitely in the playoff hunt, without a doubt. Like I said, two games behind the Titans, or the Chiefs, not the Chiefs, excuse me, that going, we'll get it right. Two games behind the Texans with two games left against them. It's within reach, dare I say. But one of the things that cannot continue to happen is what we're about to blow this whistle on. Let me get that music. Blow the whistle. Yeah, man. I tell you, blowing the whistle this week. Hey, listen, man, 77. One of the top tackles in the league. I'll give you that. Top 10 in the league. Stop it. These penalties are, you said it, they're killing the team. Here's my thing. I think LaJuan should just stop talking about it. Just go out there and do it. Get it over and done with. He had a couple penalties in back-to-back penalties on one drive. It was 2nd and 6, unnecessary roughness that pushed him back 10 yards. Then just to double down, he had a holding call which pushed him back another 9 yards. Can't win with it. Can't do it. Won't do it, as Mike Singletary would say. Then it was 3rd and 17. No, it was 3rd and 14. Those two penalties that LaJuan had that I just mentioned back-to-back, it pushed him to 3rd and 13 on the 10-yard line. Then he put the Titans in a 4th and 17 after a false start. Can't happen. I'm blowing the whistle on Taylor LaJuan this week. He blew the whistle on himself. His wife blew the whistle on him, too. Had him dress up as a penalty flag. Hey, listen. That's it. It has to stop. Minimize it. LaJuan, you're better than that. You know it. Go out there and show everybody why you're better than that, why they gave you that contract. That's it, folks. That's the show. Bye week it is. We'll be back next week getting ready for the Jaguars game. Enjoy the games this weekend. The Titans aren't playing, so take your behind to church. Thanks for tuning in. God bless and good night.